Okay, good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here today. Diane Zablosky had to withdraw at the last minute. She was supposed to be part of this panel, and I hope all of us who are dealing with or have dealt with aging parents will be understanding of her missing. And I've incorporated some of her presentation into mine, so you'll get the, kind of get a twofer on this one. So I wanted to give her credit for this as well. Maybe I have to do this rather than the, let's see, maybe the mouse isn't working. There we go. Okay, this is a topic when you say HIV in people over 50, and I, again, when I first got it working in this field back in the late 80s, when you said over 50, people would have said, what are you, nuts? But it's actually kind of ironic, because if you think about two of the prime faces of HIV, Rock Hudson was in his 50s when he was diagnosed with HIV, and Magic Johnson is now in his 50s. So if you look at, and they kind of represent the two major facets of this disease, and that is older people who themselves are infected, and then also people who are aging into their 50s and beyond as they live longer with the disease. We also want to give a little credit to Liz Taylor, who passed away this year because of all the work she did in addressing the issue of HIV/AIDS across all generations. I'm a visual learner, and I like to think images capture this. I mean, some of you may remember this game as Chutes and Ladders from your childhood. And having been involved in this HIV for going into my third decade, this is a great image for HIV because there are chutes and ladders. We have climbed great ladders and gone ahead in the game, and every once in a while we run into a chute that sends us back, hopefully not before where we started, but it does set us back forward on the way to an effective vaccine, and of course the greatest issue that we still face is the our inability to stem the tide of new infections here in the United States and globally. Diane is a sociologist, and so she wanted to bring some of the social science perspective to our understanding of this disease, and she wanted to see how this kind of awareness grew back even in the early days of the epidemic. There were reports of older cases as early as 86 and 87. There was an article in the Annals of Internal Medicine reporting a 75-year-old man with Kaposi's sarcoma. There was an article that showed that partners of transfusion-related transmission were 8 years older than those not infected. And that gerontologists, geriatricians, nurses, social workers, et cetera, began to grow aware of this issue and even invoked the involvement of the American Association of Retired Persons. So in 1989, AIDS in an Aging Society, What We Need to Know, is the first book that came out to address this topic. It came out of the National Institute of Aging at the NIH. It was the first time that brought together social scientists and behavioral sciences, as well as the medical community, to look at this specific population. And it was really the first integrated and multidisciplinary approach to addressing HIV. The next major publication was in 96 with Noakes, who targeted practitioners and focused on the caregiving and public policy issues. And this, of course, this is the first book, and you can see that Diane was one of the editors of it. So she, I was really sorry she couldn't be here because she truly is one of the leaders in the starting of the whole issue of HIV in the older population. Matilda White Riley said this in 1989. This prevents an early opportunity to begin prevention efforts now, to forestall any possibility that the epidemic may become strongly entrenched among the more than 60 million people aged 50 and older. And I fear sometimes that, like a lot of things with this disease, the early opportunities have been lost. In 97, there was a second conference that was held by the NIH. And again, it was published in the Journal Research on Aging, and continued to focus on this age population as a marginalized group because of all the major emphasis that was being driven by the numbers at that time around young MSM, communities of color, and things like that. Over time, the social science and other researchers paid more attention to this thing. There are now dozens and dozens of citations listed if you do a bibliography search. In 1995, the National Association of HIV over 50 was founded. There's a woman named Jane Fowler who is truly one of the saints of this issue because she herself is a heterosexual woman who re-entered the dating scene after being divorced and ended up becoming HIV positive and ended up then going forward out and starting working the starting of NAHOF and also starting HIV Wisdom of Older Women in order to share her experience and raise awareness around the issue and the issues of prevention as well as care and things like that. So more and more over time, science embraced the need to do research, understand, and transmit information about the disease in this segment of our society. Why age 50 and over? That number is an artifact of CDC reporting. At one time, it was 50 and above. They didn't make any distinctions at all with that age group. But it did allow us to look at perspectives of people in midlife, which was, again, something new. Now it's broken down into smaller segments, and we can do better work between those who are 50 and, you know, there is a difference between 50 and 65, and now that I'm 57, I appreciate that a lot more. In 2008, the CDC did an in-depth analysis of the 2005 data on HIV in people over 50 in one of their CDC fact sheets. And you can see some of the, I don't want to read the numbers to you, but you can see some of the things that they were starting to pick up now about this population. Especially, it accounted for 35% of all deaths, more than a quarter of the persons living with the disease. And the projection that by 2015, 50% of the HIV-infected individuals in the U.S. are likely to be age 50 and older. And again, it goes back to the picture at the beginning. It is people then older getting infected, as well as people who, thankfully, are living longer into their middle ages, but it's presenting new challenges for those of us in the public health and the AIDS service communities. The 2008 CDC data showed that 48% of those people, 13% were age 50 and over. If you break down that 13%, you can see that 12% were over 65. But half were in their early 50s. 18.5% of the deaths reported by the end of 2007 were people over the age of 50. If you look at trend data, you can see that the if you added a trend line to that graph, it would definitely be pointing upward, although it has plateaued a little bit. The same national data that we see in the national data, we also see in North Carolina data. This is by your diagnosis in 2010, and spreading it out for HIV disease by age in 2010, and proportion of cases by age for HIV disease in 2010 in North Carolina. I apologize for this graph because I don't know how clearly you can see it, but I think the interesting thing about it is that the oldest of this population group are actually bucking, I don't know if I get a cursor here or not. You can see that the ages 60 to 64 and 65 and above are actually bucking the state trend, which is, you can see, is heading downward, and the other ones are also mimicking. So this has led to some national recognition of the issue. In case you didn't know it, September 18th is National HIV AIDS and Aging Awareness Day. It was established by the Health and Human Services. And in 2010, there was actually a White House Office of National AIDS Policy had a special session addressing HIV and aging. So, these are the numbers, and where have they driven us to? There's not a great deal of stuff that you can say about people age 50 and over, I think, that you couldn't say about other populations as well. So for a lot of it really is across the spectrum of HIV services, from primary prevention towards through care, is to incorporate an increased awareness that there are this population out there, that it is growing in number, and that it's going to present ongoing and new challenges to those of us who work in this field. Sadly, in this population, as in others in the United States, there is the issue of racial disparities. As you can see, 12 times higher for African Americans and 5 times higher for Latinos compared to whites. And there is a lot of the social science data research, a lot of information about older men of color who have sex with men and really are dealing with, you know, kind of the triple threat of stigmas. It's not only the issues around age and same-sex behavior, but also race as well. Data also suggests that older men of color who have sex with men are much more closeted than their younger cohorts. They have not, quote-unquote, out to families, church communities, co-workers, and things like that. So, and we know from a lot of data, a lot of research, that the more closeted someone is, the more prone and they are for higher risk behaviors. So that presents some challenges. Everybody knows this, right? This is, should all be, everybody familiar with this, the National HIV-AIDS Strategy, which was released by the White House Office of AIDS in July of 2010. And you can see, again, it has those primary goals of reducing the transmission rate, the lower number of infections, and increasing that status knowledge level to 90%. So this is driving and should be driving how we on the state and local levels are responding and doing our own planning. You know, CDC recommendations, routine testing for people up to age 64. People over 65 should be counseled to see whether they have any risk factors or not. And then again, they recommend that there be prevention strategies targeting older persons. Because what we know is that for older people, they believe it or not, there's sexual activity going on, which is sometimes hard for younger people to get their heads around because, you know, they don't want to think about granny being busy in the afternoon, you know? When Diane was on TV one time discussing this topic on 2020, her niece was in college, and so all of her people in the dorm got together in the room to watch Diane on television, and as her niece said, one of her dorm mates said, "Oh my God, your aunt talks to old people about sex," you know, and they just found that really icky. So that becomes a real challenge but we know that they're sexually active, but there are some issues around prevention and safety. There is a lack of awareness; it's still out there. A lot of cultural norms and things like that have not prepped this part of the community for understanding the talk about safer sex or safe sex or whatever truly applies to them. And it's informed by a couple things, you know, those cultural scenarios. You know, what is appropriate sexual behavior? When, where, how is it appropriate to be sexually aroused? Cultural scenarios which are shaped by context, historical period, gender, age, religion, ethnicity, and other social variables. What sexual scripts we follow, our own interpretation, and how we translate the norms of social behavior into our own choices. There are also There are also, of course, that older people sometimes deal with a lot of negative stereotypes around sexuality. You know, the thought that they do not have sexual desires, that they're not able to, if you know, they want to, that they're too fragile, that they may hurt themselves by having sex, that elderly people, especially women, are not attractive, and therefore no one would be interested in having sex with them, and that somehow the idea of older people having sex is shameful or perverse. I don't know if you can read this in the back, but the caption from the cartoon is, "Mr. Goodrich, what say we tell each other our darkest fantasies and start exploring the outer limits of modern sexuality?" Okay, well, guess what? It actually is happening with that. The AARP did a second survey on sexual activity over 50, and the numbers are encouraging as some of us age. 60% see sex as part of a good relationship, 84% disagree that sex is only for the young, but only 24%, most of them being male, had ever discussed sexual problems with their physicians. So again, if you go back to that lack of awareness or reduced awareness around this topic, where they're getting information from becomes a challenge. We also know that there are some age-related risk factors for HIV infection. Age-related vaginal thinning and tears in the vaginal area can heighten the risk of transmission. The gender ratio You know, yes, men may control everything now, but we'll die first and you'll inherit everything. So I hope you'd find some consolation in that. But if you look at the gender ratios, especially in senior housing communities, stuff like that, you know, it's overwhelmingly male to female. And there is the whole issue of the kind of rooster in the hen house thing, because, you know, the single retired gentleman moves into the complex, and the next thing you know, the chicken soup brigade has started coming to his door for people, for, you know, women who are looking for male companionship. We also can't overlook the whole idea that injectable drug use does continue into people of this age. In 2000, Linsk reported that 16% of cases over the people over the age of 50 were injectable drug use transmitted. And again, we also know that, as with every age group, that the impaired judgment from substance abuse affects the ability to make safe choices. Something I learned about when I got into this field you never thought about was prostitutes showing up at senior housing on the day the Social Security check came. You know, it's the old Willie Sutton thing. Why? Because that's where the money is. You know, so again, you know, raises that issue about transmission. Now, again, driven by the numbers and the work that Diane and others have done over time, we have seen the rise of materials. The Gay Men's Health Crisis in New York, the Leadership Counseling on Aging organizations has worked very hard and lobbied to have HIV/AIDS issues included in the reauthorization of the Federal Older Americans Act. We've had, you know, as technology has allowed things to become streamlined and become more efficient. We have the ACREA group. You know, they've merged their update and the very well-known GMHC's treatment issues newsletter into one now called ACHIEVE, and they had a designated issue for people going older with HIV. So there are some more resources coming out. And again, these are some others in the ACREA group, HIV and Older Adults Engaged, and Older and Wiser, the Many Faces of HIV. So, what about prevention education? The new resources are great, but it's still an overlooked community in many areas. 2000 study, only 15 of 50 states had age-specific education stuff, using appropriate terminology and slogans. And as Jane Fowler always reminds us, that merely exposing older adults to information does not necessarily increase their knowledge. So we need to look at some other levels of prevention interventions. On the institutional level, it includes things like the incorporation of HIV testing, which I'm not really sure how successful we are with that across the board in primary care. My doctor has never asked me if I want one. You know, I mean, I think there's some assumptions that are made. The value of peer educators, which have been around for a long time, since the early days of the epidemic, and using HIV-infected people as effective educators of their peer group, we need to extend that and include that into infected older adults. The research that has been done shows that where seniors want to be educated is in places where they normally gather, so I don't think you're going to get a big turnout, you know, on a night, but they want to have it incorporated into the services that are offered at senior centers through churches and things like that. I think we're still on the cusp of looking at how we do new methods of communication. We know that the older population is the quickest or the ongoing fastest to adopt to digital technologies. We have, you know, I don't know, you know, they're on Facebook looking at their grandchildren's pictures. You know, how do we incorporate that kind of stuff into prevention education? The role of the physician, I think, is really important. The data shows that this population trusts the people in the white coats. But we are, you know, challenged by, you know, how much time do you get with your doctor? You know, the average physician visit is 7 minutes. And how much can that person do when they're dealing with a whole raft of age as well as other related issues? We've all sat through any NFL game, so we know about all the erectile dysfunction drugs that are out there. I hope some of you have the opportunity to do it with your 13-year-old son. You know, we have not... has not been linked to condom use in any of the ads. You know, there's no talk about that. And there is that ongoing issue of education of practitioners You know, are they willing to raise uncomfortable topics with their patients? You know, because if you ask a question about HIV, are you, you know, is it seen as an accusation? Is it seen as, you know, you've known me so long, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to incorporate older adults themselves into the co-development of educational materials and programs. There is no DEBI program targeting older persons. For all of the DEBI things that are, you know, sliced and diced into smaller and smaller segments of the community, but there's yet to be one that has developed one targeting older persons. And there really is, a need for, there has been some national stuff, but there really hasn't been that kind of leadership coming out of the either aging community nor the HIV/AIDS service community. And I think a lot of that can be tied to, where the funding streams are targeted. You know, which is, you know, you focus groups on younger people of different parts of our community. So there is that need to target those of other age-related services and get them to start thinking about this. I think as our population ages, there's going to be a new expansion on the term of cultural competency around issues around aging. You know, who is providing these services to aging people? Do they understand the language of sexuality, risk, and prevention in appropriate ways? Excuse me. And the research data shows that older people like to get information in small bites. And ACREA, to their credit, has used the CDC DEBI Community Promise as a template for developing a campaign targeting older persons in New York. They use some creative slogans. 50 is old, not cold. Sex in the 60s, sex in your 60s. You know. When frisky becomes risky. And then there is an emerging challenge, of course, older people on Craigslist and other online dating services, and how do they navigate that in light of the growing need and awareness of the incidence and prevalence rates of the disease in this part of our community. And there's also belief, you know, that we got to capture the idea that older people have something to teach us. This is from the Seattle We're All in Bed Together prevention social marketing campaign. And it says, because we older guys have had much experience to share, and we've learned about staying healthy and happy. So we have to embrace that as well. Regarding treatment, for diagnosis, CDC recommends routine testing up to 64. The American College of Physicians has no upper age limit. Medicare will pay for one test a year. And there's also a need to raise awareness about HIV-related symptoms can sometimes mimic the diseases of aging, the symptoms of aging-related illnesses. When to start, that's still a moving target if you read the treatment guidelines. There were adjustments made in them in August. There is now, if you live long enough and work in this disease long enough, you get to see the bouncing back and forth from early intervention treatment to delaying treatment, and now we're back to the pendulum of needles moving back to earlier starting of antiretroviral therapy for those who are diagnosed as being positive. The older persons, one thing to their credit is the data shows they are more likely to take their medications. So there is an increased adherence in that group. They are more likely to achieve virologic control and less likely to have breakthrough. The people who have looked into this a little bit deeper have found that those older people who do experience virologic breakthrough is mainly because either they were treated with first line medications years ago that are no longer effective, the issue of, you know, that they're being exposed to those who, they're being infected by those who were treated with earlier treatment protocols that are no longer effective, or suboptimal adherence when people were asked to take 20-some pills a day, things like that. The issue for treatment, of course, is that there's a lot more comorbidity with older people, which links to greater mortality. And one of the things that the data shows is that for older people, you're not going to get the CD4 count rebound that you're going to get with younger patients. And so that as a metric should be watched carefully, because even though people may have achieved virologic suppression, they're not going to get the numbers going back up the way they would if they were younger. And that's more of a function of age than anything else. Complications, you know, again, the complications of the disease, as well as those that happen just as we age. There is some relief and support for the idea that older people are more sensitive to drug adverse effects. The whole issue of polypharmacy, you know, as I age, all of a sudden there are more prescription bottles on my bathroom counter for high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and now I'm taking vitamin D and a daily baby aspirin and all that kind of stuff as I age. And so you add to that, you know, if you look at your parents' or grandparents' medicine cabinets, you see all of these bottles in there that if we've transferred care into the more into the pharmacological region. And so the interactions between aging-related medications and HIV-related medications still being explored, and it needs to be careful. In making treatment decisions, has got to be included in that, as well as the pre-existing comorbidities linked to someone who's getting diagnosed when they're older. You know, there's the whole range of things of older people with HIV that they're seeing. There's an issue, there is that kind of issue about, what's cause and effect? Is it the comorbidities of aging? Are they being exacerbated by the virus itself? Is it side effects of the medications? And we know that some of the antiretrovirals did lead to increased cardiovascular disease and diabetes, things like that. We do have the long-term effects of hepatitis kicking in as someone gets older. As one of the liver doctors once said to me, hepatitis is a postcard from your past. And so what you may have done 20 or 30 years ago, you know, all of a sudden now is showing up in your liver. So it does involve more than medical care alone. You know, older people have more social isolation if they're HIV positive. Again, no matter what the means of transmission were, either they should have been old enough to know better, or they shouldn't have been doing it anyway. So there's some, you know, they're much less likely to tell their children. Extended family, things like that. There's a lot of increase, the data shows, for older people, greater internalized homophobia. They grew up in a less accepting time and culture. They may be living in a less accepting culture. Some are socially marginalized due to things like IDU and their imprisonment. One of the things, of course, that older people, especially, I think this especially is linked to older men who have sex with men, is what they suffered in the 80s and early 90s. You know, I remember when I was working, I had a guy who called me, he was my age at the time, and he said, all of my friends are gone. And if you look at it statistically, from an age cohort, you know, that was the greatest loss of young men since World War II. That we had that, you know, where whole, you know, whole social networks were wiped out by the disease. So issues around survivor's guilt and things like that can all we see that sometimes can lead to a kind of a readoption of risky behaviors that they may have given up for a while. And then, of course, we have the whole issue that you've been following, this whole thing about caregiving for people with aging. But we know that, you know, smaller families, less number of kids, who is going to take care of mom and dad is becoming more of an issue. Children are more mobile than they once were. A lot of times, I know this from a number of clients who had previously been married, had children, and then separated or divorced their wives, came out, were entered into same-sex relationships, and there's a lot of estrangement from their children because of the, you know, collateral damage from the separation, divorce, things like that. Again, the need to train clinicians is going to be critical in this, because it is that point of contact with older people. And again, that idea of how are we measuring what is an effect of aging and what is an effect of HIV. We have a fragmented healthcare delivery system. There's hope that, I guess, as the electronic medical record moves out, it will become more integrated and inform clinicians of these complexities. Again, this is nothing new. If you take away that last word and you put in teen services or women's services, ex-incarcerated services, whatever you want to put in there, The idea is that there is a need for more interface and more collaboration between agencies to address this issue. These are some of the things that we should be looking to do. There are some mental health issues that need to be factored in. Again, there's that survivor's guilt, things like that. The whole idea of depression screenings recommended. You know, if you've ever read the work of Glenn Treisman at Johns Hopkins about, you know, he really sees that depression is the main entry point to enter into the, because people who are depressed are going to do risky behaviors, they're going to get infected, they're going to get depressed because of their infection, the depression is going to impact adherence and things like that. So, and to step into that cycle, there's a need to deal with, to do some depression in screening, and but also we have to be aware that HIV, not all HIV treatments and all antidepressant treatments are compatible. And there's also an issue, of course, that the system is getting swamped. You know, as people live into their 50s and beyond because of the efficacy of the drugs now, they're putting more and more demands on a limited healthcare system. You know, an example, of course, is the Ryan White funding has remained stable, but the demand for services continues to increase. And finding points of access, we're caught in that bind of the emphasis on increased screening and increased testing, but once you find it, then what do you do with them? You know, and what services are available for them? And those of us have seen in the last couple of years the state budget cuts that support ADAP programs and things like that. And it's a double-edged whammy of also that aging services have also been cut. So we turn to aging services and say, we need you to collaborate with us around issues around HIV. And they're like, you know, I'm really just trying to keep my lights on. So I can't take on another topic right now. For public health, again, I think as was pointed out in the opening address yesterday, the impact of the Affordable Care Act is still unclear. There is some talk of a displacement of Ryan White as ACA becomes implemented and there's more access to federal, you know, Medicare, Medicaid services. But that's going to be a sea change in a lot of people's lives and the way that we have developed a system of care and how we're going to advocate for that. Public health has this, we have our roles in assessment and assurance, so we need to get our voice heard in the planning efforts to address this topic. The reality is that for many people now, HIV is becoming a chronic disease. And so when we talk about planning for chronic diseases in this country, we have got to get HIV added onto the kind of normal list around diabetes and heart disease and things like that, arthritis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are some resources that are worth looking at. Again, ACREA has done a lot of work. They even have, I'm just trying to imagine this in my town, but in New York they have billboards on bus stops. You know, that say things like, you know, age is not a condom. You know, that age alone will not protect you from the disease, things like that. And then again, because it is community driven, is the National Association of HIV Over 50, NAHOF, really reflects the kind of the best of the community oriented approach to addressing this topic and its services. Okay? Okay, how are you doing, Todd? I'm good? Okay, great. Thank you.